The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1070. It's Friday, the 18th of May, 2018. Don't forget, if you haven't checked it out, please check out our new podcast series called Business Lives. And it features interviews with high-profile guests. Worth seeing. You can see that at voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. Okay, that's where you can check it out. Okay, on today's podcast, I have David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil. UJO is ticker. And David discusses the significance of a written ministerial statement from the Department of Business and Energy and Industrial Strategy in support of the oil and gas industry. Plus, I also have on Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talking about the following stocks: Zytronic, that's ZYT ticker, Hurricane Energy, HUR, and Gear for Music, G4M. I also have on Market Analyst with SpreadX, Connor Campbell, talking about the following companies that are releasing news next week. Big companies like Halfords, that's HFD, Marks & Spencer, Max & Spax, MKS, and Kingfisher Group, that's KGF. I also have, of course, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil. David, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for asking. The songs I'm not suffering from overexposure this week. I've been on one before. Thank you for asking anyway.
I'm sure shareholders wouldn't agree with you, David. They'd have you on every day, I'm sure. But it's nice you're coming on to highlight a bit of ministerial support, which is nice for the oil and gas sector, I suppose. And it's nice to highlight that. Before we get into that bit of news, David, for people listening right now who are not familiar with Union Jack Oil, can you summarise what the business is all about, please?
Yes, be delighted. Union Jack Oil basically formed to be a producer and explorer specifically focused on shore UK. We have two interests in producing fields and Fiskerton Airfield and Geddington, which are surprisingly of a modest income. And also, we've got the Biscuitfort well to be drilled mid-year, and also Homewood and in the Weald Basin. So we've got lots of activity to look forward to, and some other projects which we're advancing. And we take between 10 and 15 and 20% interest in various projects which are later stage. That's what we do. We do exactly as we say.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, your release today is an acknowledgement of a, like I said, a written ministerial statement, and it's about the support and commitment to the industry, the oil and gas industry. So it's obviously welcomed by you, but it's very significant, isn't it, I suppose, from your point of view?
It's a great help, because I know that a lot of our peer groups and ourselves is equally very concerned that, you know, you put a lot of hard work and working with lots of different organisations to basically discover the oil and then have it produced. And it's always been very, very hard. And maybe it should be. Well, not maybe. It definitely should be hard because of potential safety aspects. That's what concerns people most of all. So the government have come out with a statement yesterday, which was really, really helpful, because it's basically showing something. It's giving you a little bit of guidance and a pathway. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So hopefully a lot of the companies now will say, well, there's no point. Whereby they may have said, well, maybe we wouldn't be doing this. Well, maybe now they might say, oh, well, we're seeing a little bit of acknowledgement here. Do you see what I'm trying to... It's a help. It's not the 100% situation where you just go off and drill. No, that's not what it's saying. But it's offering you a little bit of help.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's support there, and they said it's an important part of the energy strategy for Britain, which is it's good to know. And there's a bit in there about community fund there. I mean, have you read through that? What's your thoughts on that, David?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Do you know, it's something which is back of my mind all the time. And we, as you know, we've been doing things up in the north for a long, long time. And we always, Graham Bull, my technical guy, and myself, we always go up to the meetings and hearings and appeals. And they're usually held in places where, like schools, places where there may be children or autistic and all this. And you think to yourself, hey, these guys could really benefit. Because I can't speak for my peer groups, of course, but just our opinion would be, if there's anything that could be done, and legally, it's always difficult. If you say, well, look, we'd like to give something back to the community, people might say, oh, you're only doing this because of A, B, C, and D. Well, I don't think that would be the case.
Yeah.
So it's a good one. I suppose, you know, you take the opponents of what we do, whether it be conventional or non-conventional, they've got a point of view as well. And, you know, you really have to acknowledge what these guys say. Like, I don't know, I think a lot of the listeners would look at Drill or Drop, which is an independent website about drilling and fracking, conventional, you name it, run by a lady called Ruth Hayhurst. You know, I'd recommend it gets read. It's good.
Yeah.
My peer group would probably kill me for saying this, but I like it. I think it's a fair overview. They do a good job.
Yeah,
and certainly highlight what's going on in the industry, which a lot of websites don't highlight. So, fair play.
But you know, it's nice to see that you are open and transparent, and you're open to discussion. And like you say, it's not a case of just going to these oil fields, you know, reaping the benefits and leaving. You are, you know, you want to see local communities benefit from that. And this is underlined in the statement, and you're fully behind that, which is nice, isn't it? I mean, that's the way it should be. You know, like you say, you go into these communities, and it should, you know, not only through employment should these communities benefit, but also by having sort of, you know, the oil and gas industry putting something back into them to help that community, because obviously that's where it's coming from, the benefit. So it's nice to see that, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, because the odd thing is that the onshore oil industry has been going on for 60-odd years now, maybe even longer. I think the first oil was found in Scotland in 1895.
Yeah.
So it's nothing new. And the war effort, Second World War, you know, these fields helped a lot. A lot of the Americans came over and drilled oil wells up in Nottingham. You know, it's got a heck of a history. And it's only been the last 2 years where all this sort of issue about onshore has arisen. A few years ago, and again, it's pretty good that people have raised their head above the parapet and said, well, we want to see this, we want to see that. And it's certainly made a few companies sit up and say, right, we have to do this, we have to do that. You're not talking about the days of 10, 15 years ago. Everything is ultra-modern. Yeah. Everything is done safely. There's so many agencies you have to satisfy before you even get a sniff at drilling. It's an industry. I think the industry is misunderstood. But on the other hand, maybe the industry should offer seminars. I don't know, schools. Some people you'll never please. However, but to actually explain and be part of that community, I think would work. I really, really do.
Yeah. It has to be. It has to be of mutual benefit, isn't it, to make it work and sustainable. David, as far as Union Jack Oil is concerned, what's the next sort of milestone you're hoping to achieve here now?
Well, I think everybody's aware, we formed an alliance with Humber Oil and Gas, and we look at other projects, and we're really every single week we have a new project come in which we screen, and hopefully over the next few weeks or so we can find a project that we'd like to get involved with. We're always looking, you know, it needs to be, you know, very late stage or production based. So hopefully we can sift out a few of these type of scenarios over the future.
Okay, David, well, listen, one final thing, and you're a practice pro at this right now, but if someone's listening and they're not yet following the story but want to, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, as I always say, everything to do about exploration and oil and natural resources is risk. So I've got to say that. However, I think we're very well placed for news flow in the future. We've a lot going on, as a bit explained earlier. Also, I believe that we're a very transparent company with good advisors. And lastly, I think most important probably is we always do as we say on the tin. Might always be good news, but we always do it anyway. You know, you get your ups and downs, we all know this. So they're my three reasons.
Excellent. David, good to chat to you. And like I said, you've got a lot going on, so no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Justin. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. Have you got your Union Jack suit on for the ready for the wedding?
I was going to ask you if you'd got the bunting out, actually.
I've
no real plans, to be honest with you. I think a barbecue in the back garden might appeal quite strongly if the weather's half decent tomorrow.
Do you know what? The better half, they just come back from the shops with barbecue stuff.
There you go, you see.
And I just saw Sky tweeting out, they were chatting to people at Windsor. It's a guy called, guy called Joseph from Ghana, who basically had a Union Jack suit, Union Jack hat, Union Jack sunglasses. And he said, Meghan is more than the sister. I'm thinking, that's the guy to walk it down the aisle, dressed like that.
Well, I'm glad you said that. But when I was a younger man, I always coveted David Bowie's Union Jack overcoat. You remember that
yes.
he used to wear?
Yeah, I always used
to think, oh, that'd look quite cool. But I never quite had the bottle to do it. So.
Cool. Right, let's get on to stuff we know a little bit more about than the royalty.
I did toy with chucking in Churchill China and Port Merion and talking about royal wedding crockery and things, I've managed to resist the temptation.
Yeah. I think there's overexposure elsewhere. We can leave it to them.
Yeah. I've resisted the temptation.
Okay, so what are we looking at, Russ?
Three that we've all looked at before, actually, Zitronic, Hurricane Energy and Gear 4 Music.
Yeah, Zitronic, the one that got away. Or in fact, it's not just one that got away. I've had many that got away, but one of those ones I looked at years ago didn't bother.
Super little company.
It's gone on to do marvellous stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we actually looked at it last March at 400p. Mm-hmm. It went all the way up to actually £6. And on this very broadcast, I suggested that maybe it might not be a bad idea to take some profits. And although it had dropped to 550 by then, it's now gone back to £4, which is basically where, you know, was kind of an initial entry point. And so I'm tempted to have another look at it at these levels, quite frankly. Newcastle-based company, or Bladen-based company, three factories up there just outside Newcastle, £65 million company. And, you know, it's a specialist in rugged, high-tech screens and sensors. Now, the problem the company's got is that it doesn't have a huge amount of visibility. And in 2013 and now again in 2017, it's just had one of those little sort of hiatuses in demand, particularly on the financial services side, where it's very big in things like ATMs, which has just cooled things down a little bit. But it does also sell into vending machines, medical, entertainment, big screens in public areas. It does screens from 5 all the way out to 85 inches. So this is, you know, this is stuff that's got to be right. It's not easy to make. What's interesting to me is 95% of its business is exports. So if the pound goes down, which it's doing right now, thanks to the unreliable boyfriend, that can't be doing too much harm. If I've got one question mark, you know, it is exposed to gaming, you know, 70, and, you know, obviously it's not all betting. It's not all those beastly FOBT things that the government's been talking about this week, but there's a chance that some of them are. So that's one thing that I've got in the back of my mind. But the interims came out. They weren't brill, but they weren't dreadful. Revenues were down about 10%. Profits were down about 15 or 20. But the operating margin is still more than 20%. It's still generating cash. And it doubled the dividend payment, the interim, to 7.6p, and it's got a net cash balance sheet. Now it's going to be slow. It's going to be slow burn. The ATMs business was down nearly 30% in the first half of the year. They said it's coming back slowly in the second half. They got some potential from pickup from gaming, but they didn't talk a big game for the second half, which I think is probably quite wise. They've changed their sales model. They're now going direct sales to America and Asia, presumably to make the most of the weaker pound. But this is a company with high returns on capital, high margins, good cash flow. And now we're nearly a 5% dividend yield that's trading on 15 times forward earnings. I can't promise you that it's going to suddenly go bananas, but to me, it just feels like a really good company. The share price has pulled back, and for the patient investor, it feels like it might be worth having another look at these levels. What does the chart tell you?
Do you know what? If you scrolled out to like 2016, £4 was always a good level. It's like had resistance.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping.
Well, do you know what? £4 resistance in 2016 and has provided support right now. So I think it'll take a lot to push it down below that £4 level now. So I think it's a nice little support
see
to build
what
from, you know?
And
it's had a double bottom there as well recently. So it's tested it twice. So I think it could build from here. You never know. Who knows?
Let's see what happens.
Cool. What's next, Ross?
So we've done one Northern company. Let's do another one now, which is Gear for Music, G4M, another AIM-quoted stock, joined AIM in summer 2015. Mm-hmm. We first looked at it when it was £6. It got to north of £8. It's just pulled back a little bit now, 150 million cap, and it's an online musical instrument seller. You know, so that's what it does. It's based in my hometown of York. I must admit, I'm slightly heart in mouth on this one. I know that we're up since we looked at it. Whenever somebody describes something as transformational, I always think, oh, that's a bit... The CEO said they've had a transformational year. Full year figures, sales up 43%, operating profit down 25% because they've invested heavily in the business in terms of new distribution set, enhancing a new distribution centres, York, Germany and Sweden, systems, marketing. So they've definitely put the money in to scale up the business to make sure that it keep on growing. And we've seen this with other big online players. We've seen it at ASOS. We've seen it at Boohoo. We've seen it with Zalando in Germany, Uxnet Support in Italy. It's not a completely capital-light model. You do have to put the money in to get the returns out. And now I think the big test for the company is it's put the investment in. Customer numbers were up 39% last year. Conversion rates were up. Can they keep that going and drive returns from those investments? If they can, momentum jockeys and growth hunters will continue to be happy with the stock. But don't forget, it is on about 60 times earnings for this year and 40 times earnings for next year, even with some pretty punchy earnings per share growth forecasts in there. So it is one. Momentum, people only. Value, income, move along. Nothing to see here. Stick with it for now. Seems to have a really good, interesting model, good position, generally pretty scalable business. Let's see if they can turn these investments into some further profit growth going forwards.
Yeah. Trouble is, when you get a stock that's risen so fast, so quickly.
Yeah, I know.
You know, there's a bit of congestion there, people selling, taking profit, you know, for a long time, and you have to settle down and consolidate for a long time. Doesn't know how long that's going to be. There's a trouble, and that's what it's doing. It's been doing that since 2017, pretty much. So
it's going to be one of those that's going to grow into the multiple. A bit like, I mean, yeah. Fevertree. You know, the numbers were really good this week, but the stock went down just because it's on such a fat multiple. So
a fat multiple. I like that.
There you go.
Marvellous. What's next, Ross?
So we've gone from Newcastle to York. Now we're going to the Shetlands. So we're getting further north. You know, even further north to finish off with. That's Hurricane Energy. Now we first looked at this. One of the first podcasts we did together, actually, February 17 at just over 50p. It got up to 67. It went down to 25. Now it's just on a little bit of a run. It's got a market cap of around £1 billion. It's an early stage oil explorer, and I think it's a story that you know quite well. Halifax, Lincoln, and above all, the Lancaster field at West Shetland is where the excitement's at. It's an expert, courtesy of the chief exec, Robert Trice, in fractured reservoirs, getting oil out of layers that are trapped underneath or within sandstone. So it's a new technology. I think it's been proven out in Asia, but certainly not in North Sea waters. So there is still a lot of work to do here. And the shares really did very badly last year because the company raised £530 million through equities and convertibles. There was quite a little bit of indigestion. There was a warrants issue that frankly caused a bit of a corporate governance stink. And as a result of that, actually the non-executive chairman resigned in November. Since then, shares have begun to stabilize and actually now gather some momentum again. Helped naturally by the rising oil price hitting $80 a barrel. Appointment of a new kicking non-executive chairman, ex-Tullow, Steve McTiernan, donkey's years of experience in the oil and gas industry. And the company's just put out a couple of progress updates on that all-important Lancaster field. On the early production system, they're looking to start getting some initial production H1 2019. There's an offshore construction vessel landed. They've got a buoy coming out of Dubai that's due to arrive in June and move on to the next phase of construction. So just one that, having put it up, looked at it a year ago, not really mentioned it as a share price, you know, gyrated, there are at least some good things happening now after a period when, frankly, the news flow went pretty quiet, and what news flow there was around governance, which didn't look that clever.
Yeah, well, when you've got companies that are pre-revenue, you know...
This is the thing.
They're news-reliant, and when there's lack of news, the share price drifts, because you find in these sort of smaller caps or these, more risky stocks, people started getting a bit worried and start to sell when there's no news. And yeah. I did pick some of these up by 27 pence.
Oh, there
and they
you
went
are.
To, they went to, and, but do you know what? I was at that point where I had too much in my portfolio, and I took a small little profit on them and just I just dumped them. And now, mm. right, another one that's got away. There we go.
There
just
we
lack
go.
Of patience. I'm
well,
one of these
we'll
people.
See what happens.
You know, I'm one of these people we're talking about, David. Lack of patience. I had lack of patience here. I just got out, and I felt I was also a bit too oil heavy, not my body. I mean, yeah. my portfolio, you know. So I just sort of it lightened up in the oil stocks a bit. But,
yeah, and again, as we know, these early stage explorers, they're not for everybody. They are very high risk.
Yeah.
You know, they're only for a very certain type of investor who is prepared to lose money in and potentially a lot of it in pursuit of potentially big gains. Mm-hmm. This company's still got to prove the tech works. It's still got to find the oil. It's still got to find the funding. There are still some very big hurdles out there. But I suspect if they do find something, it's one of those finds that, you know, you'd imagine that a larger company might like to think, ooh, hello, we'd better have a closer look at this. So I think that might be a possible end game, but only if they actually find, you know, the alleged 2.6 billion barrels or whatever it is of oil that they think might be down there.
Yeah, yeah, marvellous stuff. Russ, thanks for that. And
enjoy your barbecue this weekend.
You will enjoy. I think we will have to get dressed up as Union Jack people, you know. Union Jack suits, they're quite cheap. They're quite flammable, though, apparently. So don't stand too close to the barbecue.
Don't stand too close to the barbecue, clearly.
Have a nice one, Russ.
Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, market analyst with Spreadex. You all right, fella?
Very good, thank you.
Marvellous stuff. So we're talking about stocks with news out, bigger cap stocks with news out next week. So who are we starting off with?
We've got Halfords. It's their full-year figures on Tuesday. They've actually been doing pretty well this year. I think towards the end of April, they were at I think it was around 3.93 or just above the 3.90 mark, which I think is their best price since Brexit.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, look at the chart. Looking back to July last year, they broke down. I said in June, you're right. After Brexit, they broke down to like an all time of £3, but they've had this trading range, which they've been going to 3.80 back to sort of 3.25. But yeah, they're at 384 now, so it's the top of the range. They're just trying to break out of that range. So yeah, not looking too bad.
Yeah, I think it was a buy rating from Citigroup, I think at the start of April, that sort of sparked the push towards, you know, 380, 390. You know, since it hit those highs, it hasn't really pulled back that much. It's what, just above 380-ish. It was its third quarter figure in January. Total revenue for the quarter was up 3.2%, and for the year, for the 9 months to that point, was up 3.6%, which is pretty healthy for a UK retailer. I think like-for-like sales actually sped up in the third quarter, which makes sense because it covered Christmas. I think they were up 2.7% in Q3 against the 1.9% rise for the 9 months to mid-January. However, it did say that the UK retail sales environment would remain subdued for the rest of its financial 2018. And despite those quarterly sales being slightly ahead of expectations, I think it said the growth was led by the lower margin cycling business, mm-hmm. which led analysts to revise its sort of full-year pre-tax profit estimates lower. I think it's now expected to be between £70 and £74 million. Which is down on the figures it posted last year, which is interesting given, like we were saying, that it's done then quite well since the start of April. In terms of what our clients are doing, it's fairly mixed around the 380 mark. There are still buyers there, but I will say some sellers have started to creep in because I guess it's one of those stocks now that slightest margin of error for its full-year figures on Tuesday. You know, if it does see a dip in pre-tax profits, then given that it's risen quite sharply in the last 5-6 weeks, it could pull back. And like you're saying, you know, it's been around these levels before pulling back. It might not take a lot on Tuesday to cause it to pull back below the 380 mark.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is one of, I mean, let's be honest, it's retail, and so it's got that the dreaded, you know, R of it. So yeah, it's, you know, and it's a really hard market, retail, isn't it? So they're never going to be a wow. I think there's never going to be a wow factor to their results. But and considering they are trading to the top of the range, I'd be surprised if it goes higher here. But there we go. What's next, Connor?
Marks and Spencers is a
retail again. No retail.
They've picked up a bit since like mid-April, but I think in early April they were sort of testing like 260. which I think is like was their worst sort of closing level since 2009. I think I've got that right, which is obviously is not good, but also not necessarily a surprise.
No,
really.
No, except, do you know what? Was it back again? Well, do you know what? They recently they hit they spiked down on Brexit. And literally down to a low of 2.55. They didn't close. They closed at £3.01. But yeah, they've gone down recently, 2.60. The double bottom there, 2.60. But again, I can't remember the last time, you know, M&S came out with a really bullish statement. I don't think I was alive. Yeah, I don't think I was alive, actually.
Its third quarter figures weren't good. I think for the group sales for the third quarter actually dipped 0.1% to like 3.16 billion. Total UK like-for-like sales were down 1.1%, which isn't good. There was a 2.8% decline in like-for-like clothing and home sales, which, you know, that isn't necessarily a surprise. I think the real kicker was a 0.4% drop in like-for-like food sales over Christmas. I think the company blamed tighter budgets, which is fair enough. But I guess, you know, like for that Christmas period, you think that should be when a slightly more upmarket food brand like M&S should be doing well. So the fact that it declined year on year isn't good. I think online sales as well, they were up 3%, but that's really bad, basically, if you compare it to its peers. And I think it's still, despite investment in its online offerings, it's still not as robust as even, say, somewhere like Next, which has got that really strong, despite it having the high street problem, similar to Marks and Spencer's, it has that really strong online presence that M&S just doesn't have. Mm-hmm. In terms of its sort of full-year figures on Wednesday, I guess investors are going to want to have seen a return to positive revenue growth in the fourth quarter to sort of prevent. I think in its interim point, I think it posted a 2.6% rise maybe in half year revenue. Mm-hmm. So investors are going to want to see, make sure that isn't eaten in too much with the second half of the year. But it's going to be hard to see it posting decent fourth quarter figures given that period covers, you know, sort of the really bad weather that really impacted the high street. Like, it could be another set of not too great figures from Marks and Spencer's. I think last year it posted a 10.3% drop in adjusted pre-tax profit. If it can perhaps avoid another double-digit drop, then that might be something for investors to cling on to as well. Yeah. In terms of what our clients are doing, they are actually, they were buying when it was hitting those 260 lows, and they're still just about broadly continued to buy as it's crept back towards £3. Not with any great vigour, but there are still buyers there under the £3 mark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, listen, it is trading the lows, I suppose. You can't go far. I do like that there's been a really sort of, strong signal as far as the double bottom is concerned on the top of the chart. I mean, that was like I said, 260. So it tested once on the 23rd of March, and then it tested again on the 11th of April. So that's quite good at 260. So it suggests that was a quite strong support. So even if they do fall from this level, it maybe won't go below that 260 level. So, but it's a wait and see. It's a retail stock. It's been touched with a retail barge pole. So who knows? What else, Connor?
It was sort of completing a retail hat trick. We've got Kingfisher, who it's their first quarter figures on Thursday. Again, really bad start to the year. I think it was at 5-year-ish lows by early May. It's sort of the brunt of the losses coming. It actually did the first couple of months of the year, it was doing all right. But then its full year figures in March, I think it fell 13% in the 48 hours after its full year figures. They just weren't good, really. I think revenue was up 3.8% for the year to 11.7 billion, but I think that was actually a 0.3% decline on a constant currency basis. Pre-tax profit was down 10.1% to 682 million, which is again not great. Like-for-like sales-wise, it's sort of the same issues that have been plaguing the company for the last few years. I think total like-for-like sales were down 0.7%, the brunt of it coming from France, where like-for-like sales were down 3.5%. In the UK, like-for-likes were up 0.6%, but that was with a sort of a 2.8% decline at B&Q, sort of made up for with the 10.1% rise from Screwfix. And internationally, Poland was sort of, again, a highlight. I think like-for-like sales there were up 5.3% against the 2% rise seen for the international division as a whole. So again, there are spots of positivity within Kingfisher. You know, if you look at it brand by brand basis, they have got brands that are doing very well. It's just the weight of France at the moment is sort of constantly dragging everything down. I think also investors are perhaps getting a bit sick and tired of waiting for this one Kingfisher transformation plan to kick in and start yielding results. Like, I think the company's repeatedly said that the plan is still on track. But it blamed business disruption related to the rejig for the sort of the poor figure seen in its last financial year. It said that the same kind of business disruption will be ongoing in 2018, 2019, which I think again put investors off and helped send it towards the lows it struck in early May. Yeah. I think it wants to get investors back on board. I guess just some signs that the like-for-like decline, especially in France, is easing. It did say that it was. It said though I think back in March it did say though that the market in France remains volatile. It said it was encouraged by the market backdrop in France, so perhaps things might start turning around in the first quarter. I will say though, from our clients' perspective, though, you know, with Halfords and Marks and Spencers, you know, similar-ish stocks, they were mixed. They've really, really strongly been buying Kingfisher since it fell below £3 when it was at the 280 mark, especially. They've been buying the stock. So I guess, you know, multi-year lows, they're looking for perhaps some kind of bounce. You know, expectations and perception of the stock, may have changed slightly, given that it's fallen quite sharply in the last few months. So I think they're perhaps looking for a bounce on any signs of improvement across the first quarter on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again. I've got to say, though, all of these charts and these retail stocks, I mean, they are reflecting the sentiment. They've all been beaten up, you know? And so, yeah. And I'm not quite sure, I haven't really looked at the fundamental level here, but it's probably worth looking at and see what kind of PEs they're trading on, because, you know, it's generally, you know, everyone's down on a stock. It's quite a bullish thing. If everyone's sold already, there's not many more sellers left, you know, so it's not a bad thing. So, all they need to, you know, do is release a bit of positive news, and it could do quite well. And like I said, it'd be beat up for a long time.
Like, Kingfisher isn't Marks and Spencer's, its figures across the board were bad. Kingfisher, though, there are spots of positivity. Like I was saying, you know, like flights were up in the UK, internationally they're doing pretty well. So there are bright spots there for Kingfisher if you can just sort out France, basically.
Yeah. So, listen, there's a lot of people who love to sort out France. I'll put that, you know, I'm not talking about retail either. But anyway, Connor, thanks for that, fella, and have a nice weekend. We'll speak next week.
Next week. Thanks very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, SDX Energy. That's SDX. At four, Ocado Group, OCDO. Did you see that rise yesterday? Literally, I think it was 70% in the end. That's a FTSE 250 company. That's phenomenal. At three, Anglo-African Oil and Gas, AAOG. At two, Seeing Machines. Of course, I had Paul Angelatos on from the CMC yesterday. That's C sticker. And number one, most followed company was Plemos. PLMO. All right, top five most liked RSs are as follows. At five, Infrastrata. Contract signed with Deep.KBB GmbH. At four, in fact, we looked at the chart earlier with Nicola on the podcast. At four, Motive Bio, result of placing. At three, Macango Resources. Macango signs definitive agreement with Telaxis. At two, SDX Energy, result of flow tests at LMBN Yanis 1X Discovery. And number one, most liked RNS, came from Echo Energy Gas Discovery at ELM 101004 Well. And that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.